I'm not going to send around
captured pictures of planets in other galaxies, which they've never been able to do before. They've always been able to picture, capture pictures of stars, of course, but not of planets, because they don't just reflect light. They don't actually give off light. But now they have pictures of planets, and Rabbi Kaplan proposes a very interesting piece that each malach has to be associated with a star in order to differentiate it from other malachim. Because in this world, differentiation between people, things, stuff like that, is achieved by dimensions, length, height, width. I know two people and no two entities can be in the same place at the same time. So therefore, they are separated by definition. But it says in the spiritual realm, there are no physical measurements. So therefore, how do you distinguish between the malach Gavriel and the malach Michael, let's say, hypothetically? If there's no space to set them off, and the time for all of them is the same time, so what sets them off? So he wants to suggest that that it is associations which set them off. Meaning that although Gabriel himself, let's say, is purely spiritual, but he's linked to a star or to a planet. And Michael is purely spiritual, but he's linked to a star or a planet. That linkage is what differentiates between the malachim. The star is not the malach. The planet is not the malach, but the connection is what differentiates them. And therefore, if when the non-Jew serves the star, he can in essence be serving the malach associated with the star, not necessarily the star itself. Okay? So it's not that the stars have malachim in them. You know, they have angelic souls, but they're angels associated with them, that's what Rabbi Kaplan says. So here in this pasuk, it seems to support this theory which the Ashkenazim have, because it says here, "I told you, don't be afraid of the Amorite gods in whose land you're sitting." And they don't listen to me. So one could read this, of course, two ways, but a simple way to read, I think, is to say there are these gods. Don't be afraid of them. It's true that the Amorites claim they're their gods. So what? I'm stronger than they are, right? The alternative, of course, would be to read it like the Rambam would read it. And the Rambam, I said before, the Rambam is what led me to say before that Sephardim might not necessarily hold this way, because the Rambam's Christians are of their Avodah Zarah, they are idolaters, they are pagans, because they worship the Trinity. So therefore, the Rambam would have to translate, don't be afraid of them because they don't exist. Not because I'm stronger, but because they don't exist. So therefore, when it says, that you're living in their land, doesn't mean the land which they actually possess.
Is it?
What?
Is it?
Yeah, I guess so. This the Mamloes here, they have the 12 signs, this is an example of it, obviously there are numerous malachim, but it says the 12 signs of the zodiac. The sign of Sunday is Leo. Overseeing is the sun, whose angel is the foil. The sign of Monday is Cancer. Overseeing is the moon, whose angel is Gabriel. The signs of Tuesday are Aries and Scorpio. Overseeing them is Mars, whose angel is Sam, Otamuel. The sign of was Wednesday, and so on and so forth. So yeah, there would be this association, what he's making. Very good. So, yeah. The idea of you're living in their land means, of course, the land in which the superstition exists, not the land in which there are foreign gods. I heard many years ago in a book on tape I was listening to that Gandhi, who was, of course, a major hero in the Hindu religion, said that their god, Lord Ram, is the god, same god as the Christians and the Jews. I think Ram is like Ram Vinisa, right? Very high and supreme. And the Indians have over 20 million gods. So this to have... According to Ashkenaz, I don't know how they keep a list of them. I don't know how that works. But according to the proposed Pesach adopted by the Ashkenazim, as long as one of those gods is the right one, they're safe. Hmm. Right? Doesn't matter how many millions more you have. For Jews, of course, this is forbidden. For Jews, it's Avodah Zarah like any other Avodah Zarah. But for non-Jew, this will be permitted. This is what's called in the poskim. You might hear this term from time to time. It's called avoda zara b'shituf. Avoda zara b'shituf means avoda zara with in a partnership, meaning your partner, the guy that God is, Chas v'Shalom, of course, a partner with other gods. That would be the meaning of that. Yeah.
So Ashkenaz Mahal, simply because our God is stronger, we're chayav avoda zara. If we worship.
No, because God said so. God said, that's what that pasuk says in Dvarim. The other nations say have other gods, but you're mine. We have this special relationship because that's the God of Egypt. Something's bothering you.
Yeah, me too.
Well, let him go first.
So God took us out of Egypt. So because he took us out of Egypt, we have to believe in him and we have to serve him?
No, him only.
Only, but why what does he say to the tribe have to do? Why not?
Because his tribe means he took us to be his personal servants. In other words, he owns us in a way that he doesn't own. Listen to this. He owns us in a way that he doesn't own the other nations of the world. Of course, everything is owned by God, but there's a much more direct relationship. It says. But you shall be greatly aware for your souls, for you did not see any likeness on the day Hashem spoke to you at Horeb, Sinai, from the midst of the fire, lest you act corruptly and make yourself a carved image, a likeness of any shape, a form of a male or female, a form of any animal on the earth, a form of any winged bird that flies in the heaven, a form of anything that creeps on the ground, a form of any fish that is in the water under the earth. And lest you raise your eyes to the heaven and you see the sun, the moon, and the stars, the entire region of heaven, you'll be drawn astray and bow to them and worship them, which Hashem your God has apportioned to all the peoples under the entire heaven. But Hashem has taken you and withdrawn you from the iron crucible from Egypt to be a nation of heritage for Him at this very day. Okay? It's saying two things. It's saying, listen, when I took you out of Egypt, we have a special relationship. At Mount Sinai, you didn't see anything. Right? There were no images there. It was only me. Yeah. By the way, that's not true about Kriya Kamsuf. Kriya Kamsuf, they did see images.
Well, in my answer, they said nothing that creeps on the ground, but then Hashem told them to make the snake and the image.
Yeah, but that wasn't supposed to be worshipped.
But it says don't make the image, it doesn't say it, right?
Well, it means an image for worship, for purposes of worship.
So we can make images if we're not going to worship them.
Yeah.
So I can make a statue of a snake and stick it in my room as long as I don't worship it?
Yeah. The problem is statues of human beings and heavenly objects.
So we can't go to the Lincoln Memorial and
you can go to Lincoln Memorial, don't worship Lincoln.
So you said there's a problem with human beings.
Only them.
So, but that's what it is, the Lincoln Memorial.
What do you mean, you own Lincoln Memorial?
No, but you could go there, but you just can't make it yourself.
Right. Many years ago, my father said to me, not so many years ago, he said, they make a big deal about the Taliban, right? If you guys took over, meaning us, the ultra-Orthodox, instead of the modern-Orthodox, if you guys took over, you would destroy the same Buddhas in Afghanistan that the Taliban did. Right? Because that's the first thing they did. They had these giant Buddhas from, hundreds, thousands of years ago, and they broke them down because they were avoda zara. So I said, no. We are Jews. We have loopholes. We just get a non-Jew to break off the nose, and no problem. We can keep it around. That's how it happened to the Sphinx, The Sphinx was some, they wanted to keep it around, so they had to break off the nose, so it doesn't happen.
Oh,
that.
Is it
around,
long as
that's not perfect? Yeah.
No, I heard
a non-Jew has to do it. A Jew can't break off the nose. I mean,
I heard that explorers use to boost their nose as target practice.
Yeah, I'm just kidding. I don't think.
It destroys the nose. It destroys the whole
you can destroy a finger. We can do a toe.
Yeah,
I'm just giving one a loophole, possible loophole. Yeah.
What kind of images do you see?
Like we see in the Ma'aseh Merkabah and Yechezkel, they saw a person sitting on a throne.
Oh,
that's not allowed,
though.
It's not allowed for you to say it. Listen, was Yechezkel allowed? He was a prophet. What does your Cheskel say?
No, I mean, like, if I beat him, I might beat somebody else also.
Yes, for you it's a problem. For your Cheskel wasn't such a problem.
I know.
You shouldn't do this. Don't do this at home. But it says in your Cheskel that when your Cheskel saw a vision, what did he see? He saw... He said about the there was the chayav. Above the expanse that was upon their heads was like the appearance of the sapphire stone, and the likeness of a throne. And upon the likeness of the throne was a likeness like the appearance of a man upon it from above.
Man? What man?
The Shechina.
The
Yoshka.
Which
religion are you from?
No, I mean, like, because, you know, you also a man, so that's what they worship. So. That's the problem for me.
No, but here it's a
human. Yes. This is a marshal, that's what he says. It's a marshal. Ke'ein. Says in Hebrew, Kimare Adam. Yechezkel knew he wasn't seeing God, but he was seeing a representation of God.
He didn't see God. He has no image of man. He says that he has a... Somewhere, I don't know where, somewhere it says
that.
So God says no image, nothing like man.
He's
no shape or form.
That's true. So but there is Nebuah which he gives. And that Nebuah depicts him in human form.
Long hair, short hair?
It says in Ani Zeros, long hair.
What? No, I saw Yoshka, I'm telling you, this is like Yoshka.
You were kidding, weren't you? You thought you were kidding.
It's
not a woman. It can be. Maybe another Navi would have seen it as a woman. But Yechezkel, I don't know. I don't know about that. But Yechezkel certainly saw it as a man because he saw it as in the sense that it governs the world. Meaning that the Shekhinah, of course, is given the power to govern the world by human beings. But it's a governing entity, right?
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, he saw it as a man, a king, sitting on a throne. I don't think, certainly to a male Navi, I don't think Hashem would ever be seen as a woman. Perhaps to a female Navi, yes, but I don't think to a male Navi. Bear in mind, because Navi, the image is created in his head from the information which is stored there, and there's his own input into it. So I don't can't see of a man ever depicting Hashem as a woman in a prophecy.
Mm-hmm. So us folks, we give Korach to the Shekhinah in order for the Shekhinah to be with us.
Yeah.
But how about the Rambam interpretation according to which the Shekhinah is nothing greater, not part of
that? Right, because that means that, but nevertheless, we still give power to that Shekhinah. In other words, the Shekhinah, according to the Rambam, is like an inflatable ball. Right? So Hashem says, listen, this is not, according to the Rambam, speaking according to Rambam now, this is not me. But this ball represents me, right? If you put air into it, you got a ball. If you don't put air into it, you got a piece of plastic. It's all up to you to put the air into the ball.
And what is the ball there for us?
Well, we get to play with it, of course. But it actually is it's supposed to provide a tremendous sense of kedusha and meaning in life to have such a magnificent relationship with this entity which represents Hashem. Yeah.
How can you?
You can sense the Shekhinah. You can feel it. You can see it. It changes the way you perceive things.
Right, but you don't worship it.
I didn't say worship it. Did I say worship it?
No.
No, I just said you have a relationship with it, not worship it. Yeah.
Two questions. First of all, would it make sense that if Hashem looks like a man, would look like a guy with a short hair? No, but that's,
why can't God be a Nazir?
Oh, not?
assume you have a beard, yeah.
Okay, fine. That is the second question then.
Yeah.
We say in a Shmona Yisrael, Medim Nach Mulach, not Lecha. So, what
do
you
think
then?
In Hebrew, in Aramaic, they're interchangeable.
Okay, but
Lach and Lecha.
Shmona Yisrael is in
Hebrew, so how... There are places where God is referred to in feminine. So it's alright, in Torah it says in Parshat Hazinu, Tzuri Ladetcha Peshi. The rock who gave birth to you, who sapped its strength with sap. So that's assumed, you know, the gave birth to you is like feminine. So there are feminine references to Hashem. But what are we making of this?
I'm just trying to see, because the whole Humash is that he. Then some part
is
the female part. So I'm trying to see.
Yeah.
I'm trying to see. So what's the shot there? Like, either you're he or
so whenever it took that Hashem, so to speak, as a she, it means in the sense that Hashem made his relationship with us depend on our relationship with him.
But we're the bride, I thought.
Usually, but not always.
So when are we groom?
When we're talking about the Shekhinah. Okay? Anybody else? So, again, how did I get on this topic of the... What? No, that was the first, I know that. How did I get on the topic of Shekhinah? Who asked about Shekhinah? You asked about Shekhinah. Okay, so what was your question? Did I answer it?
Let's say you.
See, that makes me feel good. Thank you. Yeah.
Before
I don't remember. We neither of us remember even.
Okay.
Before you go on, I heard somewhere that there are a lot of prophet books that we did not include in the Tanakh.
That's correct. They're not books. They're prophecies. They never were.
Right.
They weren't necessarily ever written down.
Who decided which one?
Anshei Knesset Gdola.
Okay. So what was their basis? What were they based on?
Whatever they felt was a nevuah from which subsequent generations could learn, they wrote down. Whatever they felt was a nevuah which was intended for that Navi himself, or for his generation only, they did not write down.
So why didn't they include Matthew
there? Matthew?
Yeah.
Matthew was later. Matthew was one of the Gospels.
The Gospel, huh?
Yeah, wrong religion.
No, I heard Matthew.
What about the apocryphal books that?
So the apocryphal books were excluded either because they were considered inaccurate, right, or just fables, or because they were considered to be not of sufficient merit, or because they weren't written with divine inspiration.
Were they Jewish though?
Yeah.
Matthew was Jewish?
No! Yeah, Matthew was Jewish, but that's not... We're talking about two different things.
Right.
He's talking about... We're talking about the Gospels, which are written by disciples and disciples of disciples of Yashka. He's talking about ancient books, which, like, the Book of Maccabim, which were not... about Hanukkah, which were not included in Tanakh.
How come? That's a good question. Why not?
So I gave him three answers. One is that it's because they are inaccurate. Two, because they don't have sufficient merit. They don't teach enough. Three, because they're not written Ruach HaKodesh. Any of those answers.
In my opinion, Hanukkah is more meaningful than the Purim.
But not necessarily Megillah, the Megillah written for it.
Okay, fine. That is another question.
Yes.
Since...
You really have a question?
Yes, we do.
Are you sure?
I heard that during the whole time...
You get a lot of stuff. Where do you get all this stuff?
I'm telling you, I have a messed up head. What's it
called?
Oh my God, I forgot. Okay, you have a question.
On national television.
How you doing?
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Yoshka, I heard that there's this guy by the name of Paul, right? Happens to be a Jewish guy from the Sanhedrin, who goes inside.
He was from the Sanhedrin. And you think about Peter.
Yes, Peter, right. Paul.
No, Paul.
Peter Paul.
Paul was a bad guy. There's a matter who says that Peter was a good guy.
Right, I heard he was a fighter, and he went inside as a spy. Like,
It's unlikely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, what happened then?
Somebody made up a story.
No, but how did our words from Tanu Talmud got into their Bible?
But they were speaking Aramaic back then.
Right.
No, besides, they're made by Jews.
But Baba Shalai.
They're made by Jews.
No.
Sorry?
Just because something is unlikely, then it didn't happen?
What?
I think, I don't remember what his question was, but Peter was actually a Jewish guy who was trying to...
Yeah, I don't believe it.
Just because it's unlikely?
No, because it's not going to... Anything which is not in a mainstream medrash,
mm-hmm.
it's not a mainstream medrash.
Oh,
it's
I
one of these off-Broadway midrash, right? So off-Broadway. So they were found in the Cairo Gemiza. Now, midrashim which are found in Gemiza, you know, they might be in Gemiza for a reason, right? Gemiza is like a shameless place in Cairo. So, and besides that, it's not confirmed by any of the mainstream midrashim. So, this is the only source. It's very tenuous and very unlikely.
But if that's the case, how come, like, well, I had a lecture about a singer.
What?
I heard a lecture about a singer where he uses this proof to Christianity. Because if you don't believe in our Torah, hey, we have over there, it's like, both Pasuk and the Shefa Mara Gemara. You know what I mean?
I know, I have to hear. This is not the same thing about Peter. This is a different thing you're saying.
What do I think?
You just said the fact that material in the, so to speak, New Testament resembles material in the Old Testament.
No, in Talmud, in Old Torah.
In the Oral Torah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it means that something.
If you don't believe in the Old Torah, what is the Pasuk doing there in your written Torah?
Oh, I mean, okay. I don't think that's such great evidence. But maybe.
Well,
this is because you find a Gemara, a piece of Gemara in the New Testament?
Yeah, because they don't believe in it, so they use it as a...
What do you mean they don't believe in it? They don't believe in what they didn't include. They took what was good and left what was bad.
No, but they don't believe
in
mezuzahs and stuff still, you know?
Like, so they don't write about mezuzahs and so on.
Exactly, so that's all the Torah I'm thinking of.
Okay, I think we're getting too far off track here. So the... So here he said, Pinchas came and he rebuked the Jews. Now, a new pasuk out. Vayavo Malach Hashem, an angel of God comes, and the question is whether this is Pinchas again, or this is somebody else. And most of the Poshim is not Pinchas, this is a real Malach. Vayeshev Tachasei Elo Asher Be'afra, he sat down under the, I think it's a walnut tree, which is an Afra, Asher Yoash Aviya Ezri, which was the Yoash, who was the father of the family of Ezri, the Gidon Beno, and Gidon his son, Ruchovet Chitim, was threshing wheat, Bagat, in the wine press, obviously the wrong place, but Lonis Mibnei Midyon, and in order to keep it secret, to hide it from Midyon. So the Radak has a problem here. Radak has a problem, it's a very interesting problem. He says, if this is a real Malach, it says the Malach sat. Malachim can't sit.
But
now,
it's
what?
Malachim can't eat either.
Right, but in this week's parashah in Vayera, it says they stood. It doesn't say they sat down, those Malachim.
Oh,
it
says they stood.
Yeah, so it says...
But this parashah,
Abraham
has their feet, Rabbi.
Who eats standing up?
Malachim.
Well, now I understand what they mean, but they don't eat. They don't know how to eat.
So today's practice, when
you go to
the
party and you're
standing,
yeah.
We try to...
It's angelic, you're saying, yeah.
If he is partial, he washed their feet, what do you mean?
What? So, he didn't wash their feet, he said, well, you go wash your feet. He gave him the water. It never says that they sat down. It says, because there's a Yerushalmi which says, Malachim ain't lem kfitim. Malachim have no springs, which means they have no knees. So they have no knees, so therefore, how can they sit down?
Is that meant to be taken literally?
One would think not, right? But the Radak certainly does. Radak is asking that question. He's saying that they can't sit down. He gives the obvious answer. He says that the Malach didn't... No, actually, he doesn't give the obvious answer. He says the Malach didn't... Well, I guess this is one of the obvious answers. There's several obvious answers one gives. He says the Malach really didn't start to sit down. He just stayed there. He didn't move from there. Okay? So the Radak is saying an amazing thing. The Radak is saying a Malach, even though he's a spiritual entity, is bound by certain parameters. Now, I think this is because the Radak belongs holds like the Rambam. That's a very big machlokas.
Between the Rambam and the Rambam.
Ramban, Ramban, this week's the Nasik Parsha.
Yeah.
And what happens when you see a Malach? We mentioned, I think, did we mention this? We don't. The Ramban says, if you see a Malach, you're in a vision. There's no such thing as a Malach taking on an actual body. The Ramban says that's not true. The Ramban says a Malach can't take on an actual body. And that's what, in fact, Malach did.
Thing that they put on,
what?
Called the cave thing.
Yes, the last Ramban Abresha speaks about that. So the so according to the Ramban, what Avraham Avinu saw, everybody else saw too, because they were angels who had taken on a body. According to the Rambam, what Avraham Avinu saw, only people who are privileged to see these angels saw. Otherwise, they saw a very weird scene of Avraham Avinu going and giving food to thin air. Okay? Now, Avraham was in this vision. Sarah was in the vision. Lots of people were in the vision. In stone, Lot was in the vision. Probably a member of his family, perhaps even all the people in stone, even the very wicked ones. But the point is that all this happens in the vision because he knows a Malach is not capable of taking on human form in any shape, form, or form whatsoever. One second. According to Ramban, as I said, they do. So what the Rabbak is saying is that I think it's like the Rambam. He holds that the Malachim don't take on human form, and therefore if it says they have no knees, meaning it means that they can't bend, even when you perceive them spiritually. It means that to have a knee would be a contradiction to what it means to be a Malach. And therefore a Malach in his vision to you can have no knees. Now, if you go like the Ramban, the Malachim can take on human forms, so they would get it lock, stock, and barrel together with the knees. Yeah.
He's threshing wheat in the wine cellar.
Yeah. Wine press. Yes. To hide it, so they won't come and find it. Where they don't expect to find it, the enemy. Okay? In terms of the Radak, as I said, it seems that he's saying like the Rambam, and that's exact.
It's not the middle
of what?
That concern on the Radak.
No. Yeah, but if you see them in a vision, the question is why you can't see them sitting down in a vision. So it must be that even in the spiritual realm, they have parameters.
Oh, is that the understanding?
Yeah. The Rabbah holds like the Rambam. That's bringing down here from Pesukim Yeshayah.
The Rabbah is that they cannot, even in the vision,
yes,
down.
Yes, that's the Chiddush.
Why? Because you have to recognize that they are Malachim, and since you don't see them sitting down,
right. Yeah. That's why by Kedusha we stand with one leg together, like to indicate that we're like Malachim. The reason why that is so is because in Yeshaya says Malachim are called stationary. Human beings are called moving. Because they're stationary, they are put by Hashem in a certain spot with a certain mission, and they don't move from there unless Hashem decides to move them. Whereas human beings have their own free will and can constantly do whatever they please. So that's symbolized by the vision, which you see they have one leg, which doesn't bend. So they can't really effectively move from place to place, except by hopping.
Why do you need to move? Why do we want to be
what?
Why do we want to be Malachi? Better to have a vision?
No, we want it because he wants to praise Hashem that it was a Malachi. In other words, we want to be one unit with them. So we want the whole world to be in harmony.
Yeah, but what are
the
legs for?
If I don't need legs, right? So I usually tell this joke once a year, Parshas Vayetze, but you're lucky tonight. You get to hear this joke early, right? This is a stupid joke. Okay, it's a Lithuanian joke. Okay, a Litvish joke.
Oh, thank you.
So Litvaks really have no sense of humor. They just they are sarcastic. So that's basically what this is. Well, so in the old days, they used to have people called Prushim. Prushim would sit their entire lives in shuls and shtiblach, a kloizen they were called, and sit and learn. Their Prushim means they're abstinent. They like semi-hermit existence. They would pull themselves out of the mainstream of life and just sat and learn.
Did Mary know?
What?
Like
who?
Like us,
yeah. Like us, yes. So that's good example.
Were they married?
Yeah, so they married. So they went to their wives every few months, whatever. So so there was one parish in one town whose entire life was writing and writing and writing and writing. Obviously writing his Kedusha more and more and more. Finally, one day he dies. They open up his last will and testament. It says, bury all my writings with me. So this is very, very distressing to the people of the town. This man was obviously a holy man, writing away his whole life, and everything is going to be lost. So they went to the Rav, asked what the Rav of the city, what to do. So the Rav said, I'll tell you what. You bring me one of the books, and I'll look at it. And if it's worthwhile, we'll hire Soprim to copy, scribes, to copy all his books throughout the night. And that way, when we bury him tomorrow morning, we can put in the originals, but we'll still have saved a copy of everything. So they bring him a copy of the Parosh's Chidushim on Breshis, on Sefer Breshis. And he opens up the Parashas Vayetze. And he says, it sounds cooler in Hebrew, but say English. It says that there was a ladder, and Malachi Elim Olim V'Yodim Bo, the angels of God are going up and down. So he says, Kasha, this is difficult. Malachim have wings. Why do they need a ladder? Okay? You know, they can just fly. So the Rav is a little bit nervous about this question, you know, what exactly where. Says, oh, yeah. All right, let's see, maybe the answer, sometimes you just ask a question, or if you get the answer, maybe the answer will make it more meaningful. So it says, the answer is V'yesh Leimar. We can say that it's talking about young Malachim whose wings have not yet grown in. So the Rav says, you know what, just throw everything in with it. So the moral of the story, if one could say that there is a moral, is that Malachim do not have real wings, and even yet the Tanakh describes them as having wings. The wings are symbolic of their essence. Since it's symbolic of their essence, and their essence is a specific essence, each mouth is slightly different, but a specific essence, even the symbolism which you see cannot change. Okay, so therefore, according to the Radak, so therefore if you see a Malach, you must see the Malach in a certain form. Yeah.
Why does Radak take the knees thing literally?
What?
Why does Radak take the knees thing literally?
Because he holds the, you know, if I can digress for a moment. This, I don't like calling them modern Orthodox. Some of the academic Orthodox community, you know, in Yeshiva world, they derive modern Orthodox Jews.
Coin term, copyrighted.
Right. What's even worse is the academic Orthodox. They're much worse. Modern Orthodox are nice guys. I teach every day modern Orthodox school. Good boys. Really good boys. They're ma'aminim. They know that they try to serve God very nicely. But academic Orthodox are people who are usually university professors who want to look good in the eyes of their colleagues, and also like saying things which make them look not so religious. So therefore, the academic Orthodox come up with all sorts of things. For example, the latest academic Orthodox trend is to say that all of the Bible, all of Chumash, until Lech Lecha, never took place. No, they haven't.
Definitely from the Zin Bereshit to Ben Bereshit 2.
Have you read Mark Shapiro recently?
Is he Jewish?
What? Yeah. Mark Shapiro is a good friend of mine. Email buddy.
Is he Orthodox or from Haifa
University? No, from Scranton, Scranton University.
Is he Orthodox?
No, he's Orthodox.
So how
do
you also believe
what?
Huh?
So he's that's what he said. It's not one of the Ikari Emuna. So another fellow who just wrote an article, his name is Schubert Spiro, also an Orthodox rabbi, who was a professor in Bar Ilan. He says that it's not one of the 13 principles to believe that any of the things described in Parshas Bereishis or Noach is true.
Okay.
It's a beautiful metaphor. You know, the flood. Well, there's two ways to look at the metaphor. One is that it's talking about the forces of good and the forces of evil and the drowning of evil. And the other is to say that Noach, there was a Noach, and he took a little rubber ducky, put it in his bathtub, and called it an ark. You know, you can do many things if you're going to call it a metaphor. So the point is that one of their bases for their claim, one of the things in which they stake their claim, is this Rambam. They say that this Rambam, it says that the appearance of Malachim in Chumash is a metaphor. That there were the Malachim were not really there. That when Yaakov fought with the Malach, he didn't really fight with the Malach, because you can't fight with the Malach. When Avraham Avinu served them the tongues, they didn't really, he didn't serve anything the tongues, because you can't serve a Malach a tongue. That's what the Rambam says. So therefore, the way they learn the Rambam is that the Rambam holds that, and I'm not saying that Schubert Spiro, Mark Spiro holds this way, those are just, they speak about the flood. But they hold that all of these appearances of Malachim are merely metaphors, and that means we can say that lots of stuff of Chumash is a metaphor. The question is where you stop, of course, but that's not...
Well, Fulmer then is like that, Rabbi.
Yeah, why not?
It's my question. Why Lakwasa? They have just a fantastic stuff.
Arbitrarily.
But they're academics. They're not that stupid.
Yeah, but they're Orthodox academics. So, says one of the way, they stop halfway. Yeah. So,
Not all of them do that,
though. What?
Not all of them.
I have to show them. We have many academics who are truly B'nai Torah and Yirei Shamayim.
Like, for example.
Like Shabtai. But we have other ones. I'm talking about the ones. I'm not talking about all of them. I'm talking about the ones who are on the, the cutting edge of, let's say
they're on the
thing.
Cutting edge as well.
What?
There
are many edges. These are the ones who are about to fall off the edge.
That one.
What's
that?
How about Trubisky? I know what he holds. I don't think in Israel there's so much interest. I think it's like an American thing. But what I wanted to say is that, but that's really a misunderstanding of the Rambam, in my opinion. What the Rambam is saying is not that they are metaphors, but they were visions.
Right.
And there's a difference between a metaphor and a vision. And in a metaphor, of course Malachim can sit. You can do anything you want. In a metaphor, it's like silly putty. Well, this way, that way. You can do whatever you want with a metaphor, but a vision is different. The world of vision also has ground rules. And one of the ground rules is that in a vision, a Malach has to appear in a certain way which expresses his essence. And a certain this way which expresses his essence, the essence does not include knees. So we can't have these knees. Can't sit. Okay?
Well,
that was all an answer to what you asked.
I was going to say that.
Okay.
So, but how did Yaakov's Geranasha pop out of place, or whatever it was?
So a vision, the reality of a vision is so powerful, that it actually has physical ramifications.
Like in The Matrix?
I never watched The Matrix, but people say that is what happens in The Matrix. So,
maybe you have to watch it.
Yeah. I run in MTA, I run a class on, I told you, right? Judaism through movies. So, they always ask me to bring The Matrix. Do The Matrix, but I can't because it's rated R. So it's my own self-imposed limit. Even if the R is because of violence, I'm not going to show it in MTA. So, I've never seen it. Anyway, where are we now? Yeah, so this Malach obviously comes to Gidon, and he says, let's go back to Pesuk Beis. He says, the Malach says, "Ve'ela Malach Hashem v'yom elav Hashem imcha gibor ha'koyach." God is with you, the strong warrior. Okay, so The Malach is the according to the Malbim. I think maybe it's because I think it's the Malbim. Is coming at this point because it's kind of sitting at this point in time because Gideon is demonstrating two very important positive traits. First of all, Kibud Av Va'Em, because he's threshing his father's grain despite the danger, and also he's demonstrating courage. It's true, he's not a fool, he's not going to thresh the grain in the broad daylight in the open field, but he's threshing the grain, which runs a significant risk. So this Gideon has a schutz of Kibud Av Va'Em, and he has the advantage of great courage, so that's why the Malach comes to him at that point. This point, the Malach's proof is from a little bit later, from Pasuk Yudalad. The Pasuk Yudalad on Pasuk in Pei Zayin. He says, "Va'yipin Hashem, va'yomer lech b'kochacho zeh." Go with this strength. So this strength is either Kibud Av Va'Em, courage, or what we'll see in the next pasuk, which is the third possibility. And Pasuk Gimel says, "For every love, Gidon." So Gidon, he's not shy. He says to the Malach, "Be Adoni, excuse me, my master. V'yesh Hashem imanu, is God with us?" Now this is interesting because when the Malach said God is with you, it was really like saying Shalom Aleichem. But Gidon is so angry that he doesn't take it that way. He takes it, he answers it literally, right? And he says, "God is with us. God should be with me. Is God with me? Is that true? For Lama Mitzah, son of Kozos, why is all this befallen us? Where are all his wonders? Which our forefathers told us, Lamor saying, that God took us out of Egypt. And now God has forsaken us. And he gave us the hands of Midian." So a few interesting things here. First of all, of course, this is a very chutzpahic statement on Gideon's part, right? So we like chutzpah in Judaism. Generally speaking, Jews are fresh, brazen people, and we take pride in that trait. And the reason why we have that trait is because one is supposed to be chutzpahic when appropriate. The classic example in Shas is Choni HaMa'agel, where he went and he drew a circle around himself and he said, "I'm not moving till it rains." Right, the Chayis won't need to rain. And when it rained a little, he said, "Not enough." When it rained too much, he said, "Too much." Until it was just right. So Choni, and the Shimon Shatach was the Nazi design, said, "If you weren't Choni, I would put you in a Cheren. But what can you do that you're a little child who's brazen towards his parents, and his parents does, nevertheless, what the kid wants?" So the brazenness is very effective. Now, if you're not worthy and you're brazen to Hashem, you get zapped. And that's happened to Levi, the student of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, who did complain to Hashem also about similar things, and he became lame as a result. So people have to be careful to know where they're holding, whether they can be sincere or not. But if a person is sincere, then chutzpah is one of the most effective tools we possess. Bilam, for example, also was chutzpahic, right? And he said, Hashem told him not to go, and he said, "I'm going." Right? And he did go. Hashem gave in. It's an amazing thing. If you are stubborn enough, God's got to give. Now, this is only if you do it, only if you know your stuff. Now you're doing it for the right reasons. Otherwise, this is not something you should try at home. But if a person has the capacity and a person is doing it sincerely, it can have a major impact. And this is a form of tefillah. It's not supplication. It's demand. Reb Tzadik says, a very important Reb Tzadik, he says, and the Yad Mishnah and Saita, that just before Mashiach comes, there's going to be a lot of chutzpah in the world. As the Pasuk says in Yishayahu, "Yer Avu Nar Bezokeh," the younger will mock the older. So the Tzadik says, it's not just a punishment, it's a tool. In other words, the time right before Mashiach requires us to have chutzpah so we can demand Hashem to bring Mashiach.
So maybe the chutzpah of the first Zion is they were not religious mostly, and against the whole will of the religious institution, that's actually provoked the actual
Could be. It's a big, it could be a big skus on their part. Am I supposed to disagree with you? I think you're looking for me to disagree with you.
Yeah,
I know. I know. Yeah. No, I don't think that, I don't think there's any reason to denigrate the original Zionists, except to say that they might not have been motivated by the right kind of chutzpah, but you see that their chutzpah was effective, right? So that is an important point. Even as long as you really sincere what you do, there are amazing things you can do, and you can, so to speak, manipulate the world, even against Hashem's will. As I say, tzaddik goes there, but Kodesh Baruch Hu Mekayim. Doesn't say tzaddik decrees and Hashem fulfills. Doesn't say tzaddik mispalel. Tzaddik davens. Or tzaddik mivakesh. Tzaddik acts. And Hashem fulfills. Says tzaddik goes there. He has to make a decree on God. Right?
But yeah. That's the right thing. Maybe if God didn't ask for the way to happen, then why should you be chutzpahdik? Why should you behave
because that's what Hashem wants. That's what Hashem wants. We see in the previous parsha in Lech Lecha with Avraham Avinu. You know, the non-Orthodox Jews, this is not even the academic Orthodox, the non-Orthodox love this episode of Avraham and Sodom because it demonstrates that God is not perfect. Why? Because Avraham had to explain to God how it should go, 50, 45, 40, 30, 20, 10. I was once, this is one of my favorite stories, because it makes me look good. I was once in a car ride with a kind of reform rabbi, and I asked him how he teaches kids about God. So he said, it's a problem. So he said, why is it a problem? He said, because of all the evil and injustice in the world. And I said, so what do you say? He said, I tell him that God is learning. So I said, how long did it take you to figure out that it's unjust or evil for a child to die young? Probably by the time you were 10 years old, you realized that, right? Maybe 12, maybe 13. So God has been at this for several thousand years at least. He's got to be pretty dumb if he doesn't get it by now. At which point the conversation abruptly ended. So obviously, Hashem created a creation in which man is supposed to give direction, rid the world of its imperfections, and so to speak, harness the power of Hashem in order to conquer the world for Hashem. So therefore, yes, Hashem wait for Klai Yisrael to do things, and just like if you have a crisis with another person, sometimes chutzpah is an essential bold move is essential, so too in this relationship which we have with Hashem, so to speak, a bold move is sometimes what really has to take place. Okay, and that's what Gino is doing. He's saying, if you are so concerned, or if you say you're with us, what's happening? Where are we going? The Maharal makes another point. I'll end with this. The Maharal makes another point in this pasuk. He says that at the time of when they left Egypt, there were always constant miracles, lots of miracles. When the Beis HaMikdash, first Beis HaMikdash existed, there were lots and lots of miracles. In the time of the Shoftim, there were very few miracles. It was like today, basically. Jewish history is cyclical. Sometimes there are great revelations, and sometimes there's total concealment. So this is a time, he said, that's why Gideon is complaining. He's saying, then you made great miracles. Yeah, where's the miracle today? Now we don't see any miracles. So it's interesting that it's only a time when there's like a great kedusha, like when they're in the desert, and when the Beit HaMikdash, the first Beit HaMikdash existed, that there are great miracles. But other times, it's not so simple. Yeah?
For a tzaddik to decree, that means you got to be a tzaddik to make a decree.
Right. Yeah, not us.
Kids be strong guys.
No. I would not. Yeah, that's dangerous. Yeah, there's a famous apocryphal story. I don't know if it's true or not. About you can look it up on the web. Sorry, Wikipedia or somewhere. About the Mekubo Yosef Del Arena. Yosef Del Arena tried to bring Mashiach forcibly. In other words, he forced God's hand to bring Mashiach. And there's an elaborate story how he caught the Satan and had the Satan in captivity, and then how he stumbled and failed by giving the Satan some smelling salts or something. Very strange story. But in any event, so it's very dangerous to demand things of Hashem unless you have confidence in, you know, the justice of your cause. Even to demand Mashiach, you have to know when the right time is, and not before. Okay, guys, have a good evening.
Where is it?
Look up Wikipedia. I'm sure it's on Wikipedia. I'll try and find it for tomorrow night, okay?
I'd rather read it for you.
What?
I'd rather read it for you.
I'll try and find it for tomorrow night. I just don't remember where it is inside.
Yeah, in terms of the historical perspective, the Temple of the Gemara.
Yeah.
The Temple was sealed in the 5th century. That was printed by pages of paper and whatnot. And like, let's say there's, I don't know, 100 disciples that copied it and then they copied it. How did they transform a whole shop to do that thing? A different paper? I mean, so the story is all these misfortunes. How do we come to this?
Accumulate all of this to, like,